This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen, and we are in the dead of the offseason now, middle of June. It really doesn't get any quieter than this in the football calendar, but of course the Patriots just continue to keep things interesting for us. So they're going to do some news, but what we're going to do after that is we're going to get into a position preview. We're going to go position by position throughout the entire roster, give you what our thoughts are in terms of roster battles, who's at the top, who's at the bottom of the depth chart. We'll do one of those a week. So this week we're going to do quarterbacks. So we'll obviously be talking about a lot about Jared Stidham and versus Brian Hoyer, but some other stuff thrown in there too. But before we get into that, we did want to hit on some of the news items of the week. I think the biggest one is this coming down yesterday about Nick Caserio, Adam, about the tampering that the Patriots are accusing the Houston Texans of tampering with Nick Caserio. Now, I think that some of this stems from last week's ring gala party, whatever you want to call it, where Jack Easterby, a former Patriots staffer, now with the Texans, comes up to get his Super Bowl ring with the rest of the Patriots last week. And there might have been a few tongue-in-cheek conversations with Nick Caserio during that gala last week.
Yeah, and like we were talking about earlier, it seems like it's something that's really hard to prove, you know, yeah, in this instance. So you don't know exactly what the Patriots have in this circumstance. And it seems like, you know, tampering in general seems like one of those things where, you know, it's almost a he said, she said type of deal. Like, you know, we feel like this happened, but it might not have, all that. So I don't know what the Patriots actually have, what, you know, how strong their case is. But it just tells you how much they don't want to lose Caserio, basically.
Yeah, so basically, I mean, there's a lot of angles to come at this. Probably do the whole podcast just on this. Essentially, the biggest thing is that the Patriots have dragged their feet so far, at least with granting permission to the Texans to interview Caserio for their open general manager job. Right now, Casario's title with the Patriots is director of player personnel. So is that considered a high-ranking official or high-ranking staffer by the NFL standards and the NFL rules? If it is, then the Patriots can actually block the Texans from interviewing Caserio. But it does sound like they're going to have some trouble doing that due to the timing of it. Last time when the Texans tried to interview Caserio, it was still the Patriots were still playing in the postseason. It was in January when they hired Brandon Gain, you know, a few years ago in 2017. So the Patriots are able to block it because it was during their season. Now it's a little bit more murky, and it kind of sounds like they figured out that they probably weren't going to be able to block any interviews, but they might be able to catch the Texans on tampering charges.
Right.
So this is going to be a long, drawn-out process because now the NFL is going to have to open up an investigation into this and look into what was happened and all those types of things. I think that, you know, it obviously relates a lot to Easterby, who was the Patriots champion last year, was his technical title. But essentially, he was like a life coach for a lot [S2] Right. [S1] Of these players. A lot of the players spoke very, very highly of him, and he would kind of just be the type of guy that you could just kind of lean on. He was the team guidance counselor, if you will, you [S2] Right. [S1] Know, and he kind of just listened to the things that people had to say and you know, really kind of help the players vent and deal with the pressures of the season and whatnot. He has now got a promotion in Houston and is now director of team development, which is a fancy title, I think, for saying, you know, that he has full control of that kind of side of things for Houston. But he is very, you know, familiar, obviously, with Bill O'Brien. It sounds like the two of them are friends. And he has basically risen up the ranks there in Houston to being kind of Bill O'Brien's like right-hand man in the organization. And without a GM, it's really O'Brien's show right now.
Yeah.
So I think that that's where the whole tampering thing stems from. But I think the one question I wanted to pose before we move on is, could this end in trade compensation? Because that's where I kind of think it might be headed if Caserio does waddle leave the Patriots for Houston, as the Patriots may be pulling off a trade for Caserio with Houston so they get some compensation back for his services.
Well, isn't that one of the rules that if there is something like that going on, that like a trade for a draft pick,
correct,
is what goes down. So in that case, I mean, yeah, I guess so. So, but I mean, obviously, if you're the Patriots, at the end of the day, you just don't want any. All you want here is to keep Casario at the end of the day. You know what I mean? So, trades might happen, or picks might be swapped or anything like that. You know, who knows? But, you don't know. I'm not exactly even sure what the exact exchange rate. I don't know if that's the right term.
Yeah, so there is some like history with it. Obviously, Belichick got traded technically to the Patriots from the Jets for like a bunch of picks. It was like the Patriots got like the fifth and the seventh back from the Jets, and the Jets got like a first, a fourth, and a seventh or something like that from the Patriots. It was one of those. It was like Belichick was already running the show.
Yeah,
like one of those. Like here's like six picks involved. Bill Parcells also got traded at one point for draft pick compensation. It's mostly a coaching thing, but there is some precedent in the league for non-player trades, got executives, coaches, that type of thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, I don't know if I'm the Patriots, all I'm really worried about is keeping Casario. He's an important piece. You want to keep continuity in that part of, the organization as much as you can. Especially with a guy as bright as Casario, who's got, I think, a great future as well. As far as the compensation and all that is concerned, I don't know exactly how that would play out.
Yeah.
But I think, at the bottom line is you want to do everything you can to keep Casario. And I think, it ends up, sort of being up to him if, none of this other stuff gets involved. I mean, does he want to, stay with the Patriots and work for Belichick, or does he want to, I don't even know exactly what his role in Houston would specifically be like when it comes to general manager, what type of input O'Brien would have, how the working dynamics would work there. I'm sure that's stuff that would be discussed, obviously. So, I'd like to think that, he stays in New England, but I mean, you never know as far as what these guys' aspirations are, what working environments they want and that sort of thing.
Yeah. I think that at the end of the day, and this doesn't really matter in terms of the league language of tampering and anything like that, but at the end of the day, it comes down to what kind of control over the roster and over roster personnel decisions does Casario really want? Mm. Because in New England, we all know that the final say goes to Bill Belichick, right? Yeah. On any trade, any draft pick, any signing in free agency. Casario does a great job, and he wears so many hats. I mean, he's basically their director of pro scouting, college scouting. He's an advanced scout for the team during the season. Right. On game day, he's in Josh McDaniels' ear in particular, but in a lot of coaches' ears in terms of situational stuff. He's a coach out there on the field. I mean, you see him out there at practice all the time, getting involved with practice. He does more than any director of player personnel does in any team in the league by a landslide. He has got more hands and more hats than anybody else. But at the end of the day, it's not his team. It's right. Not his roster. It's not his 90-man roster, and it's not his 53-man roster either. So that, I think, is the biggest thing, is that going to change with O'Brien? Is he going to get that kind of power in Houston, or is it going to be more of the same? I mean, we'll have to figure out how this all goes down. But I think if the Patriots do, if they are in jeopardy of losing Casario, I do think that they're going to get something back in return from Houston. We'll see what it ends up being, but I don't think that Houston's going to be able to just swoop in and steal him. I think that there's going to have to be some sort of transaction there to make this thing happen. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's move on to the next quick piece of news here before we get into the QBs. Tight end Michael Roberts from the Detroit Lions, formerly of Toledo. He was drafted in 2017, I believe it was. And the Patriots traded a conditional seventh round pick. So basically gave up nothing to make this happen.
Right. But
I think the biggest question here, we don't have to go deep into the Michael Roberts film well and pull out every little thing. I think the biggest thing is, you know, is this guy even worth talking about? Does he even have a chance to make the roster?
I doubt it, but at the same time, you know, tight end is one of those positions this year that's so kind of up in the air.
Yeah.
That maybe. You know, like
any one of these guys, like if you told me that Andrew Beck, you know, wins the job or wins the top three spot and makes the roster, like I think that, you know, sure. Like I don't think any one of these guys really has a ton separating them from each other.
And I do think if you go in our Wayback Machine, we did break them down when the draft was coming out of Toledo. So
it's like a statement. Yeah.
So, So I don't remember him being like a great blocker or anything, but he was sort of an effective pass catcher. Obviously, I think he's just one of these guys that they're bringing in to like, let's see, you know, like, I mean, like, you know, it's just one of those. I don't think they came in and said, oh, great, we get a chance to bring in Michael Roberts. This is a hell of a chance for us. I think
who needs Gronk, right?
Yeah, I know. Right. So it's somebody who would have to have an incredible preseason and all that to make the team. I don't see any great, you know, great difference maker potential out of this guy. So, you know, at this point,
no. I mean, I think what he offers you, though, you know, you mentioned the passing game. He had 16 touchdowns his last year at Toledo, and then he had 3 red zone touchdowns last year for the Lions. So he has kind of a feel for the end zone, right? Like he's got some good receiving skills about him down by the goal line, and he can go up and catch passes and high point balls and box guys out and do that kind of stuff too a little bit. But I think that, you know, after they lost Safari and Jenkins, you know, after they released him, they kind of just needed another one of those high upside, you know, kind of take a flyer on a guy type thing. I think that we know at this point that Matt Lacoste is going to make this team. I think obviously after he gets back from his 4-game suspension, Ben Watson's going to be in the mix certainly too. So it's really just that third spot and maybe a second and third spot if they do carry 3 tight ends out of camp with Watson suspended. So I think that he's right in that mix, right? You know, he's right in with the Andrew Becks and Ryan Izzo and all those guys. And like you said, I mean, we'll see what happens with any of these guys.
Yeah.
Some of these guys are really, when you start to, I started to kind of put together a post mini camp 53-man roster, and like there's so much talent in other positions that like it almost doesn't make sense to carry some of these tight ends that aren't going to do anything. Yeah. And like, because if you're going to carry, you know, a guy like a Michael Roberts or Ryan Izzo over, you know, one of the corners that they have, for example, or one of the offensive linemen, one of the interior guys, like if you're going to cut like a Ted Karras and Ryan Izzo, like you got to really know that Ryan Izzo can play, because I know Ted Karras can at least spot or if not start consistently at one of the guard spots or even center. So you need to be able to know for sure that one of those guys is going to be able to give you something. And Belichick often talks about, you know, they pick the best 53 players. And yeah, I think that there's some slotting in certain positions, like, you know, you're not going to obviously not carry a quarterback or a kicker or something like that. Right. But I think that at certain extent at the back of the roster, you kind of just have to carry the better football player at some point.
Right. Yeah, so, I agree.
So I think that is a lot of these tight ends are kind of falling into that. All right. So let's talk about the quarterbacks as a decent segue. The biggest thing I think, you know, is kind of with the back end of the depth chart. I think we pretty much know who's going to be the starter going into the year. But I do want to talk quickly about Brady, because I think that the statistical regression that he saw last year, are we going to see an even bigger statistical regression? And notice how I said statistical, because I'm not saying that he has regressed any, maybe a little bit, but not a ton. And I think that we knew last year that a lot of it, and we talked about it a ton, was what was going on around him was kind of dragging them down a little bit too. But do you think that we're going to, you know, are we going to see, just from a statistical point of view, that Tom Brady is going to be kind of like a middling quarterback here throughout the rest of his career or even next year? Or do you think that he's going to return back to a guy that has, you know, top 5, top 10 statistics?
Well, I think there's definitely going to be an adjustment period.
Yeah.
You know, like there's no way he's going to come in and be better than before without Rob Gronkowski. So
yeah,
that's just such a huge loss. And you know, they're really scuffling it as a whole at the tight end position. So that's a whole, you know, major position of the field that they were, you know, elite at for so long, and now they have to sort of piece things together. N'Keal Harry is going to play a big role, and that's a rookie. How much chemistry is he going to have with him right away? I think with the wide receiver core, the pass catching core as a whole, initially he's just going to have to lean on the guys he's known the best, you know, like guys like Edelman and James White and stuff like that. And then, you know, it's going to sort of build out from there as far as, you know, guys he is sort of getting to know and sort of building trust with. And that's really Harry is the guy I'm thinking about there, because, you know, he's a rookie. He's obviously a physical specimen. He's just got to find a few, you know, routes that work for him with Brady, and, you know, sort of hit those early on and then learn the rest of the offense as fast as he can. So in terms of statistical, you know, regression, that sort of thing, I wouldn't be surprised if there was some, especially at the beginning of the year. Just these sort of things sort of in the Patriots offense take a lot of time. And, you know, not saying he's going to come out and throw 20 interceptions or anything, but, you know, I don't expect him at least to come out, you know, playing his best football of his career or anything like that. There's just too many moving pieces involved.
Yeah, so in 2017, he's obviously the league MVP, the best quarterback in the league. 2018, he was, you know, depending on what metric you look at, depending on what film you grade, you know, he's the fifth or the sixth best quarterback in the league. So certainly still very much elite, right, you know, in that top five conversation. So I think the biggest thing is he now going to be still, is that where he's going to be the rest of his career, is like somewhere in the, you know, 1 through 6 range, or is he going to be more like in the back end of the top 10? And I don't really know if it matters all that much, to be honest. Like, I think that if he's, you know, the 10th or the 11th best quarterback in the league, then this team is still going to win plenty of games. But right. Yeah. But I think the biggest thing is, you know, we're not talking about any cliffs, but where is that kind of going to fall for him in the back half of, you know, I don't even, what do you call this now? The back half of his career? I don't even know what word to use, but you know what I'm trying to say. So I think that's the biggest thing, but I think that, you know, in terms of statistical regression, it's probably going to be something like what we saw last year for the most part. You know, listen, everybody loves Rob Gronkowski, but last year the numbers, just the raw numbers that he put up during the regular season, really weren't all that impressive. No. So, you know, can they get that from a N'Keal Harry? I think the answer is probably yes, you know, especially with how heavily involved he's going to be. And but I think you made a good point about N'Keal kind of just needs to get a couple of routes down in the beginning that, you know, Brady can work with him on. And that's basically what Josh Gordon did last year.
Right.
You know, there was really like, it was a fade, it was a dig, it was back shoulders and comebacks and stuff like that. Other than that, I mean, he really wasn't excelling too much or running too many other routes. So if you can kind of do that with N'Keal in the beginning, and then obviously develop him into something more and more after that, I think that that's probably a good place to start. Now, obviously, there's another whole dynamic of this about them running the football, and I've done a ton of research actually in the last week on this about just, you know, from a statistical perspective, how inefficient they become when they kind of go heavy and they start running the ball more and they do those types of things. You know, nowadays you're gonna, every single model that you look at, it's all going to tell you that passing is somewhere between 3 or 4 times as valuable as running the football nowadays. So if your passing offense is efficient and is clicking like the Patriots were even last year by like EPA standards and stuff like that, you're looking at scoring like 3 or 4 more times, you know, per drop back. And then you are when you hand the ball off to Sony Michel. So at some point in time, you got to have the passing game work out for you. Like, you got that's got to be a big part of your offense. And nowadays in 2019, we kind of know that. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, what Brady looks like, because last year, first 4 weeks of the season, obviously was kind of shaky, to say the least, until he got Edelman back, until they made the Josh Gordon trade, all those kinds of things. So it's going to be interesting to see. And you know, the narratives, like last year, the narratives were already that he was falling off a cliff. So if he shows any more type of statistical regression, we're going to hear all about that. But let's talk about really, I think, what's the meat of this whole discussion, and that is what's going to happen behind Brady at the number two quarterback spot for the backup role. It's obviously Jared Stidham versus Brian Hoyer. We'll talk about Danny Etling here in a few minutes and kind of how he fits into this puzzle. But I think it's those two guys kind of one against another there. And I mean, I think the biggest question is what does Hoyer bring to the table that Stidham doesn't? And, you know, what does Stidham have to show us in the training camp and preseason to unseat Hoyer?
Yeah, with Hoyer, I think it's just comfort in the system. It's extreme comfort in the system. He knows what to do out there. You know, he knows how to hop on and sort of, you know, just take care of things while, you know, if Brady's not there. I mean, he's not, you know, he's not a game changer or anything like that, but he knows how to run the offense. He's a veteran quarterback. He started in this league. He's played in the playoffs. You know, he's a guy that's, you know, as dependable backup as you can get for somebody like Brady in this offense. And with Stidham, he's the total opposite. You know, he's somebody that is totally green. He's just sort of barely feeling his way around, you know, the playbook in terms of learning. He's got such a high learning curve or steep learning curve because of the offense he played in college and pretty much every time he's, you know, ever played. So it's for Stidham, you just sort of want Stidham to progress from a mental side, right? You obviously know he's got some physical tools, and his accuracy has been sort of hit or miss at Auburn, and you know, you want him to get all that stuff down, but you just really want Stidham to start learning, for the game to slow down for him. You don't want him to be, you know, dropping back and sort of freaking out every time, like it seems to be in OTAs and stuff like that. So, I think right now Hoyer's your backup, and then after that, you just want Stidham to get up to speed, and then the exhibition games and stuff like that, see if Stidham can sort of make any progress from the mental side of it.
Yeah, I asked him about kind of transferring from the Auburn offense to now the Patriots offense because of how different it is. And he said that the main thing is that at Auburn, they were a spread system, you know, basically through and through. Like, they didn't do anything else. But it was also a much smaller playbook. You know, it really wasn't and he was like, here, we do a little bit of spread, we do a little bit under center, we do a little bit of this, he's like, we do, the spread is just 1/8 of all the things that we possibly do here, and you got to kind of master all of them to play quarterback in New England. And you know, obviously, if he had to play, they would shrink the offense and kind of play to his strengths and do stuff like that as well. But I think that that's a great, you know, kind of point in this, is that there's a whole lot for him to learn. Yeah. Like there's a really a whole lot for him to learn. And it's more so than like a N'Keal Harry or some of these other rookies that are just learning one specific role within the whole framework. Right. You got to learn everything.
Yeah.
So that point, I think that is just, it's overwhelming. Now there's two quarterbacks that have done it. Brian Hoyer himself in 2009 was a rookie backup quarterback, and then also Jimmy Garoppolo, obviously, in 2014. Now, both instances, the backup the year before was traded,
right?
Right before the season. So I think that there's, you know, some some evidence that it could be done, but I also think that if it's going to be done, then they're going to probably do it because they found some compensation for Brian Hoyer that they feel is worthwhile. I don't think that they're just going to do it just for the sake of cutting Brian Hoyer, which doesn't make any sense for them financially, nor does it make any sense from them, you know, just from a who's the best option behind Brady right now type of thing. Now, in training camp, or in mini camp, I should say, with Stidham, I thought he looked – we saw him at OTAs like 10 days earlier. Then we went out to mini camp and saw him there again. And I thought that he had shown signs of mentally that things were starting to click a little bit more for him at mini camp. During training camp or during OTAs, he was kind of lost, you know, as you would expect. It was very early on in the whole process. And you could kind of see that he was, you know, swimming a little bit. He was drowning. And there was the gears were turning and it just wasn't fast enough. You know, the processing wasn't fast enough. He was throwing a lot of interceptions. He was doing some things that you just, you know, that you expect a rookie to do. In minicamp, he was the clear cut number three behind Hoyer. Like it wasn't, my dog is barking. I don't know if you can hear it, but he just will not be quiet. Can you be quiet, please? We're trying to do a show. My God. He's such a, you know, he's a great dog, but sometimes he can be a pill.
He wants to get his 2 cents in about
you. Yeah. He's telling me that I'm saying all the wrong things. That's what he's saying. Anyways, you know, he looked a lot better in minicamp. That's, you know, long story short. And he was the clear cut number three. Poor Danny Etling basically might as well not have been there. You know, Danny Etling threw as many passes as I did during the week of minicamp. You know, maybe a few more in warmups and some, you know, he was like a scout team arm throwing to the running backs, you know, throwing flat passes to running backs and stuff like that. So they could practice their routes. So he could practice his throws. So the one interesting thing, I know some people have thrown this out there and written about it on the beat, is that Etling was serving as a personal protector on special teams and like playing a little bit in the kicking game. And I do wonder, you know, you never know with Bill Belichick, right? Like he always got something up his sleeve. But I think that Etling realizes that if he's going to make this team, he's going to have to make himself more valuable than just being another quarterback. Like he's going to have to add to that repertoire a little bit. But I mean, is there a role for him on this team? Because I think that we all kind of came away from minicamp saying, you know, this guy better start packing his bags because he barely played any quarterback.
No, I think he's on the practice squad again.
Yeah.
I don't think any other team's going to like want to pick him up. So I think he's safe there, you know? So, I mean, I don't really see, you know, especially after they drafted Stidham this year, it's like, you know, I just don't see where he fits.
Yeah.
You know, so you know, maybe he just sort of, you know, camps out on the practice squad and, you know, does scout teamwork and stuff like that. I don't know. I've never really seen, you know, the need for him on the team to begin with. Not to be mean about it. I don't think he's that good to begin with. And so I think, I just don't see him on the field ever for this team. You know, maybe he gets in a couple preseason games. I'm not sure. I just don't know what he would bring other than, you know, being a good scout team quarterback. He's never somebody that struck me even in college as like a, you know, a difference maker type guy. And, you know, like I was surprised he was drafted. So,
a lot of people were.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, if he's back on the practice squad, I don't think any other team's going to pick him up like we're talking about. So, you know, I think that's sort of his role.
Yeah, the interesting thing about the preseason snaps is, honestly, you know, I think Brian Hoyer, you kind of know what you have with him at this point. I would give him all to Stidham. He's really the guy that you need to develop at this point. When they drafted Stidham, you know, we kind of said that Etling was I don't even want to know what word to use for it, but just the very low end of the spectrum, right?
Yeah.
And Stidham was like kind of that middle guy. Like he wasn't quite a Jimmy G type prospect, but he was better than Stidham or better than Etling and kind of closer to like what they got with Jacoby Brissett when they drafted Jacoby Brissett.
Right.
So Stidham is the guy that, you know, really should be getting the lion's share of the snaps in the mini camp or in the preseason in the training camp and stuff like that, because we know that Brady's going to be there. We know that Hoyer, what he is. If Hoyer's going to lose his job, it's not going to be because, you know, Stidham outthrows him in training camp or something like that. Or,
right.
or you know, it's going to be because Stidham can pick things up quick enough to unseat him. You know, right. It's kind of like it's Stidham's job. If he wants it, if he can take it by the horns, if not, then they, you know, fall back on Hoyer. That's like kind of how, you know, I'm looking at it at least. So for Etling, I mean, I think that they have like kind of a plan in mind of him maybe being a potential backup quarterback of the future. Like, can he be like the next Brian Hoyer? You know, can he be the next Matt Cassel? Like, can that be the type of guy that he is? Maybe. And I think that that's, you know, kind of on the outside looking in terms of that role specifically this year in terms of making the 53-man roster. Now, I think the practice squad is a great place for him because that's, you know, he seems like a bright kid. He's a hard worker. He's from all, you know, accounts, scout team is kind of like his MO. You know, that's he's really good at that, and he's a little bit mobile and a little bit athletic, so he can play some different types of quarterbacks and do some different types of things. So I think that that is an interesting role for him. But, I mean, God's honest truth, he did not take a single snap in team drills in minicamp. Wow. And really during warm-ups, you know, all, you kind of just rotate at that point, right? You know, like, it's like walkthroughs to begin where they're going 50%, and it's really, you know, you're not taking anything from kind of the depth chart of the pecking order at that point. You know, so when they get into team drills, 7-on-7s, 11-on-11s, it was all Hoyer, Brady, Stidham. Etling wasn't even a thought. So I really think it's going to be a long shot for him to make the roster. But I think that, you know, listen, we can make a prediction here on June 13th of Stidham versus Hoyer, but I think that we all know that, you know, a lot can change. A lot can change in training camp and preseason and all that kind of stuff. But I think it's at least somewhat exciting, right, that they have a guy like Stidham on the roster who's got a little bit of potential. I don't know if I we're certainly not ready to crown him as the next guy or anything like that, but at least he's got a little bit of potential in him.
Yeah, he's got physical tools. I mean, I worry about his consistent level of accuracy from down.
Yeah, it was a little bit shaky in minicamp.
Yeah, and it was like that in college too, where, like, you know, even with an open guy, if it was completion, it wouldn't necessarily be a great throw.
He's he's like the king of that. It's like he's open and it's completed, but it's like behind the guy or too high, and it's forcing the receiver to adjust the ball.
Yeah, so instead of like a 30-yard gain, it's just 15 and he falls down. So you saw a lot of that. And really in the NFL you can't get away with that. So so yeah, I mean he throws a nice ball, he can move pretty well. And maybe this offense, once it clicks for him, really fits his tool set. That's the hope. But, you know, I mean, at this point, you really don't want to sort of depend on that. You really kind of like to have that security blanket in Hoyer. And, you know, but it'd be nice. It'll be nice to just sort of watch him in the preseason, see how he fares, you know, under, you know, live tackling and all that stuff against, you know, teams that are trying to go after him, and you know, see what Stidham can do under his first real shot here. But, you know, really, like you said, it comes down to the mental aspect of it. That's really the thing for all quarterbacks, but especially in this particular circumstance.
Yeah, it's going to be the Stidham show in preseason, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's really going to be kind of the number one storyline, other than, you know, kind of how the roster shakes out in terms of the depth chart. I think we know kind of roughly who's going to be on the team other than that, you know. So I think that Stidham is really going to be the story of the preseason and what he does. And I'm sure he's going to get a chance to maybe even start a game or two in the preseason and kind of show out with some of the ones in the lineup and stuff like that. All right. So next week we'll continue down this path. We'll continue on the offensive side of the ball. Maybe we'll go to running backs next, and that's a long discussion.
Yeah,
that is a loaded position with a lot of variables thrown in there. Is there anything that you want to tease, Adam, or just talk about in general?
Yeah, I think with Mass Varsity this week, we'll be doing the BC's having another camp this weekend. And so we'll be looking at who's coming in. These are, you know, pretty big camps. I think it's like about 300 kids per that come. And so it'll be some local kids, some out of state. And so you just sort of see who stands out and, you know, who the best guys are and see who comes away with offers and that sort of thing. So we'll be going there on Saturday. And then, you know, after that, we'll see what happens. A lot of camps like these are going on right now at different schools. And a lot of offers being handed out, a lot of kids making early commitments, that sort of thing. So it's a busy time.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds, it sounds to me like the college football season starts, you know, a little bit earlier, obviously, than the NFL season just in general, but also like these kids are starting to commit earlier and earlier.
Oh yeah. It's crazy.
There's like these like eighth graders that are, you know, like really committed to go to some D1 school or something like that. And it's just like, my God, you know, I when I was in eighth grade, there's no way I was even talking about making a varsity team in high school, let alone like, you know, being on Alabama or, you know, even a BC or anything. It's absolutely nuts. So on clnsmedia.com, I am doing my playbook series, broke down some play action stuff for the Patriots today. And, you know, we're in the off season, so I'll keep busy with some various things. Obviously, we'll do the positional preview on the pod, and then the playbook series will continue, and we'll keep up with the news. And we're going to start putting out some videos as well on our YouTube channel with me and Alex Barth starting next week with just kind of training camp, you know, questions and kind of, you know, mailbag type thing, where we just answer some questions about training camp. So be on the lookout for that as well. We'll be back next week here on Patriots All 22 as well, of course. So we'll keep busy here, even though things are pretty quiet. But like I said, I mean, this Caserio thing just pops up. Michael Roberts thing pops up. So there's always stuff to talk about. But until next time, signing off for Adam Kirchen, I'm Evan Lazar.